whitehake, yellowtail, flounder, haddock, and eastern Georgia's Bay cod. Small mesh fisheries accountability measures on yellowtail and on Georgia's Bank. In-season quota adjustments for U.S.-Canada catchings and yellowtail possessions in the scallop fishery. I'm going to have a short presentation from Jamie here. I did have a request to move up the yellowtail possession limit because of the weather. Some people have flight arrangements and things for this afternoon, so hopefully we'll take that up next, unless the council just wants to accept the ground fish work as it is and submit Framework 51.
Absolutely not.
Well, I tried. Okay, with that, Jamie.
Sure. Thank you. This will be a very brief presentation, an overview of where we are with Framework 51. Just to remind you and refresh your memory, you initiated the framework in June. We've been developing the measures from July through September. At the September meeting, you selected measures to include in Framework 51, and we've been developing the analysis since then, and today it's our expectation that you will take final action on Framework 51. Frank just highlighted the alternatives that are in this document. Just above the regulatory requirements, that would be revising the Gulf of Maine Cod Rebuilding Plan and American Place Rebuilding Plan specifications for whitehake, U.S. and Canada TACs for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder, Eastern Georges Bank cod, and Eastern Georges Bank haddock. In addition, there's a suite of management measures that are being considered, including small mesh fishery AMs for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder sub-ACL, additional small mesh fishery management measures, regional administrator authority for an in-season U.S.-Canada adjustment of quotas, Georges Bank yellowtail flounder discard strata, and zero retention of yellowtail flounder in the scallop fishery. Since the last time the council met, we've been working on the impacts analysis, and that's provided to you in your packet. All of the alternatives have been fleshed out, and in addition, there's been a suite of analyses, both biological, EFH, endangered and protected species, economic and social analysis as well. Just a brief overview of the documents that you have in your packet. You have a draft Framework 51 dated December 4th. You also have several addendums to that document, one being the economic impacts addendum, and there's a version 1 and version 2. We'll be working from version 2 today. Also, EFH impacts are also included as an addendum. There's also additional information. It was briefly discussed yesterday, the Scallop PDT memo to the Groundfish PDT, partially regarding Framework 25, but also some information on Framework 51 as well. And lastly, you have your decision document, which should help guide the work here today. I promise to be brief, so thank you.
Question for Jamie. Any questions from the audience? Back to you, Frank.
Okay, I'm going to go to the first motion, which is actually motion number 8, Karen. Okay. The committee recommends that for section 4.2.5, prohibition on the possession of yellowtail flounder by the limited access scallop fishery, the council select option number 1, no action, as a preferred alternative. And that passed the committee 810.
Thank you. Committee motion doesn't need a second. I'm going to go to the audience before I come back to the council. Jamie?
I just want to point out that if you're following along in your decision document, this is the very last page.
Thank you, Jamie. Drew?
It's also page 41 in the framework document.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. We do not support taking no action on this. We want us to go back to the way it was before with the mandatory discards, and this is the reason. And to be very clear, you know, we've sent a letter explaining the rationale, but at the end of the day, the scallop fishery is deeply committed to catching less yellowtail, period. And this is the way to do it, or part of the way to do it. Not keeping the status quo, because with the incentive to catch yellowtail and be able to sell them on, some people, despite the obvious evidence before them to not do that, have targeted yellowtail and are causing catches to go up. We want to take away all incentive to catch yellowtail and to keep our bycatch at a minimum. To be very clear, the rationale to support this is not because people aren't complying with this. That's never been our rationale. It never will be. It never should be. The rationale here is reducing mortality on yellowtail. One, discarded yellowtail, even though they're counted as 100% for dying. That is not the case in reality. Some do survive, and so you're putting more fish back in the ocean to increase the biomass. Two, you take away all incentive to catch these, so you're reducing any possible targeting of this species. It is consistent with how we've managed other stocks that are in serious decline, such as wolffish, such as halibut, such as southern New England winter flounder prior to these last couple of years. And it's when we did that with southern New England winter flounder and went to discards, it's the only time we ever got below our F target. This is all about reducing our catch of yellowtail, period, and we strongly urge you to move on, to pass a motion that reverses this decision that allows us to reduce our mortality. Thank you.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Terry.
So, Dr. Cornan, wondering if you have any information on exactly what the mortality is for discarded yellowtails. Do we have any information on that?
Is your question, what does the assessment assume discard mortality is on yellowtail flounder? Is that your question?
Yeah. Whether it's the assessment or whether we have... Whoever has the numbers, I'm just curious if we do have the numbers.
I believe the assessment assumes that there's 100% mortality on discarded yellowtail in the scallop fishery.
David Pierce. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't participate in the discussion at the Groundfish Committee, so it's unclear to me how they came to such a strong conclusion here that, in my opinion, was the wrong conclusion. So I have a motion to substitute, and my motion would be that the council recommend option 2 on section 4.2.5, which would have a prohibition of possession of yellowtail flounder by the limited access scallop fishery. And hopefully I would get a second, and then I would be very interested in understanding what the rationale that was provided at the Groundfish Committee to move in the opposite direction, because to me it's just simply a no-brainer. I mean, we want to limit to the extent possible the catch of yellowtail in the scallop fishery. So I'll see if I get a second on that, Mr. Chairman.
Second by Terry Alexander. Mike?
Well, yes, I guess I would also be very anxious to hear the rationale, because I'm at a loss as well.
Tom?
Well, I'll go ahead and provide it as the maker of the original motion. I think the rationale is the same as it was when we put this measure in place not that long ago, to improve our catch information on this depleted stock, to feed into better stock assessments, and to get a handle on bycatch of yellowtail flounder in the scallop fishery. It was brought forward and broadly supported, and really, one of the primary reasons that we are discussing this is there's a real problem with compliance, and that has been brought up every time we've talked about this. They're not following this rule, and I think it's problematic that we really consider, or strongly consider, eliminating a rule because people decided not to follow it. I think the rationale at the Groundfish Committee discussion, and maybe Frank would expand on this, or Jamie, was that we want the catch information. And we don't think that yellowtail bycatch should represent or does represent a significant incentive for a fishery that's of the nature that scallop is. I don't think it's a significant incentive to target on yellowtail, and if it is, I can't fix that. I can't fix that way of thinking. So the rationale from the Groundfish Committee was we need the catch information. We have significant problems with our understanding of the yellowtail resource. We put this measure in place not that long ago for that justification. I don't see any real reason to change it.
Jeff, David, Ellen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just surprises me that you've got, you know, that we've got observers in the access areas. There's got to be plenty of information about the bycatch of yellowtail in the scallop fishery from existing observer information to, you know, do some kind of an analysis. But whether you like the fact that there's a problem of people directing in the scallop fishery or not, it's happening. And the idea is to not incentivize people to target this fish at a time when the scallop fishery needs to survive a very, very limited amount of fish available to it. And I think I've kind of see it the way Mary Beth does it. To me, it's a no-brainer to go to zero possession in this fishery. I'd like to see the analysis of what data we're losing and giving up in terms of our understanding of the yellowtail resource. So I don't get a chance to vote, but I'm strongly in favor of the motion that's on the board, this motion to substitute.
David?
Yeah, the motion to substitute is very attractive for a number of reasons, some of which have already been stated. I have a question, however, and it relates to the decision document and the section that describes the other important considerations, DEIS references. I don't have it in front of me, so I have to ask the question. The scallop plan development team has weighed in on this issue, it seems. That's a reference in that section. And it says, see scallop plan development team to the groundfish plan development team memo. Could someone summarize what the scallop plan development team said relative to this issue?
Jamie.
So the groundfish PDT and the scallop PDT had a conference call, and we've been discussing a number of issues in framework 25 and also 51. The scallop PDT memo to the groundfish PDT looked at a number of analyses, including summarizing observer data on scallop trips since full retention of legal size yellowtail has been required, to get a better idea of the size distribution, and also looked at some information on why discarding was occurring or why it was retained. There was additional information that was summarized from dealer data. What was not able to be completed was an analysis of whether there was an observer effect. For instance, what happens on observed trips versus unobserved trips or something to that extent. In addition, the scallop PDT did note a number of highlights which are in your decision document that, number one, compliance in the limited access fishery has been low, thus expected beneficial impacts are limited, reduced yellowtail bycatch and improved data. Number two, relatively small number of limited access vessels currently landing yellowtail flounder, thus the impacts of option two are minimal. And number three, if some limited access vessels are targeting yellowtail flounder, increased yellowtail flounder catch could have negative impacts on the scallop fishery if AMs are triggered. Now, that's the summary from the scallop PDT memo. We don't have a groundfish analogous summary and with regards to that. And these are things that were pointed out in the discussion document, and I think some people highlighted some of that analysis yesterday as well under scallops.
All right, thank you. It does seem to me from what I've heard at different committee meetings that there are limited access vessels targeting yellowtail flounder, a foolish thing for them to do in light of the consequences to the whole, to the entire fishery. But there are always some individuals who just don't seem to cooperate. And the consequences of that lack of cooperation can be quite severe relative to the scarlet fishery, because it could very well and probably would trigger the AMs. And that's noted here in the document. Therefore, because of my concern about the likely triggering of AMs because of targeting of yellowtail flounder, I'll be supporting the substitute.
Ellen.
I am not going to be supporting the substitution. My reasoning is purely biological. I am totally against zero retention in any form. I feel that you lose many things. One is biological information. I find it odd that in other fisheries we have compliance. We are in the ground fishery, you have to comply. If you don't comply, your entire sector is shut down. And this has only been in effect for, I believe, less than a year. And the compliance is not occurring. I think that just because people aren't complying, you take the rule off the books is not a reason to change something. We have to give it time to work. And we need to get biological information. If we're throwing everything back, we are getting no biological information at all. I just cannot support this, and that's why I didn't support it before at the Groundfish Committee.
John?
Thank you very much, and I support the substitute motion. Normally, we're here trying to stop an industry from landing more of what they want to land. And in this case, we're trying to force the scallop industry to land stuff that they don't want to land. So I think it's kind of a logic turned upside down. So I support this, and I support what Jeff said. There's a lot of data here. I think I could be mistaken, but it's one of the few industries that pay for their observer coverage willingly, maybe grudgingly, but they pay for it. And I think, this compliance issue, based on what Jamie said, and I think it's largely anecdotal. I don't know that we have any data that says if we don't have the observer, non-observer effect, I think it's anecdotal that there is a difference between if there's an observer there or not. So I just, I think, again, back to my original point, it's our logic turned upside down. They don't want to land this species, and we're incentivizing the bad actors, in my view, who are targeting this. So I urge you to support the substitute motion.
Jamie.
So to be clear, what I meant to say, or if I didn't say it clearly, was that the observer data itself actually shows that compliance isn't occurring throughout the fishery. Now, does that hold true whether or not there's an observer or not? Do they follow the same ratio of complying or not complying? That work has not been done. But the observer data itself shows that compliance is not occurring for the fishery-wide for the limited access fishery.
Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the motion to substitute. The reason I do is what swayed me the most is a memo from the groundfish PDT to the scallop PDT. It's clear from reading that there's that the varying degree of compliance, ranging from targeting yellowtail all the way to discarding everything, has injected some uncertainty into the determination of the discards. The no action alternative does nothing to correct this situation, so I think that, especially since the industry is in favor of imposing a no retention rule, that by doing so we would improve the accuracy of the termination of discards, because everybody would be forced then to follow the same rules. So for that reason, I support the motion to amend.
Terry.
Yeah, I just want to say, as a fisherman, it would disincentivize me to target yellowtails if I couldn't land them anyway. And you know, and I know there is something. There is the other side of the argument is, well, if they're not held responsible to their catch and they don't have to bring it home, then they probably won't avoid the yellowtails. But I truly believe that people, if they can't land it It doesn't give them an incentive to go even go near it. So it's like the Southern New England bike tax. Same idea we just passed.
Mike?
Yeah, I guess I'm inclined to support the substitution as well, and primarily because I really don't see a clear, don't have a clear image of how the no retention actually does improve the data, and in fact how data in that situation is actually used in the assessment process. So that if I'm just being naive or out of touch or whatever, and either the center or anyone else, PDT, could clarify on that, it would be worthwhile, because I think it is a very important point. We wouldn't want to take an action that in fact reduced data that is in fact useful, but it's hard for me to envision how it is being used now. So I request that information if somebody has it.
Tom. Jamie, do you have an answer? Or someone from Science Center?
I think that's a question for the Science Center. I'm a little...
John.
The goal, obviously, is reducing yellowtail. I guess I have a question. I don't know who can answer it, but... the voluntary bycatch avoidance program that SMAS runs, which has been incredibly successful and with a couple of outliers, you know, and that's what we're talking about, is a couple of outliers who target yellowtail, you know, wreck the party. And that's why we're here. So my question is, if this passes, what happens to the voluntary bycatch avoidance program? If Drew's got his hand up, and he can answer that, because that program has been so successful, and I want to know if there's no possession and everyone's just throwing everything overboard, what's the reason that program stays in business? And Drew, if you can answer it, great.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. The bycatch avoidance program stays in place, and it gets even more effective if this substitute motion passes. The way that works is the majority of the vessels have signed up for updates on location of yellowtail hotspots, and then they report in their catch, regardless of whether or not it is kept or discarded. If they are encountering yellowtail on their toes, they report what they're catching. SMAS compiles out that data, and they send out daily updates on yellowtail hotspots. It gives you areas to avoid. The majority of the fleet understands that you need to avoid hotspots because, collectively, we need to reduce our yellowtail bycatch, and that's why they're participating. What this gets rid of is the few bad actors who have gone out and targeted yellowtail for profit and directed on it and not moved off of hotspots. So that takes away that whole incentive to catch it. So you get rid of those bad actors, and you don't change the bycatch avoidance system that's in place for SMS. If anything, it improves it, and we reduce our overall catch of yellowtail. And that's why we want to do this. It has nothing to do with compliance. It has everything to do with we want to reduce our mortality on yellowtail.
Well, if I can just follow up, if you're not allowed to possess, so you're throwing over all the yellowtail, what's the motive for reporting in on the bycatch avoidance?
Because we have an overall tack within the fishery that if we exceed it, then there are repercussions. Large areas that are very important to us with lots of scallops in them get closed. There is every incentive to not catch yellowtail.
Even on unobserved trips?
Yes, because, I mean, observed trips... The observer coverage is what it is, and it is across the whole fleet. I can't speak to an observer effect. I mean, that is something that exists in groundfish, too. I mean, if you want to go by that logic, if I'm, you know, on a sector trip and I catch a bunch of stuff that I don't have quota for, I mean, that's the nature of the beast. But in general, you know, you look at the way the program is reporting. People are reporting in. People, you look at where people go on trips, they avoid the yellowtail hotspots.
Mark Gibbs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a difficult one. I think the substitute, I think, will weaken the data stream for yellowtail flounder because we'll be transforming landed catch into discarded catch, and by its very nature, estimating the discards is a statistical problem rooted in an assumption that the observed trips are representative of the unobserved trips, and whereas the landed catch is part of a census that's available for biological sampling and so on. So on the one hand, a stock with a problematic assessment gets its data stream weakened, but I understand the argument about creating a disincentive or preventing the bad apples from upsetting the apple cart. I haven't decided which way I'm going to go on that, but I wanted to put that point on the record. Thanks.
PK.
Yeah, my problem is I don't think I agree with the substitute motion, because if there might be a hot spot of yellowtails, but the reason that boat's there is because they're fishing on scallops. So, and right now they have to land the yellowtail. So then you know, if they just end up throwing them over, why should they move along? I mean, if there's no repercussions of what they're landing. If they're landing that and other boats are seeing their sub-ACL go up, if the whole fleet is, then they're going to have a problem with that. And, you know, it might be a few rogue boats, but those boats should be accounted for.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share PK's concerns about this. The issue of accountability aside, for now, I don't see any mutually exclusive elements to having an active yellowtail avoidance, a voluntary yellowtail avoidance pattern program in place. That remaining and functioning in serving the majority of scalpers that are obeying the law. However, I agree with Mark that we're weakening our data stream on a poorly understood stock if we do not land what we're catching. And so for that reason alone, I'm going to be opposing the motion to substitute. And I think the accountability issue is an important one. It really is. I mean, we are making laws here and regulations. And this process is unique in the world, that we have a bottom-up process by which regs are made. And that's great. If we abuse that, that's a problem. So I it's a secondary issue for me. The data stream is more important to me, but this question of accountability is not just marginal. I think it's maybe not the heart of the matter, but it's there.
Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree completely with Mark and Ellen and PK. As Mark said, we need data, not supposition. And as PK said, this argument about incentivization is turned on its head. And Ellen said that it's a biological problem. I would quote one of our dragmen, Chris Brown. I'd like to say I said this, but I didn't. He did. Dead discarding is a crime against the planet. I will not support this.
Jeff.
Thank you for letting me speak twice on the motion, Mr. Chairman. My question is about the reporting of discards. I know in the herring fishery we've gone to the discard log program with the observers, and it seems to me you're still collecting data. You've got to give the fishermen the benefit of the doubt to fish responsibly and do the right thing in this instance, and it's not like you're going to not have any data. You're going to continue to have discard reporting, I imagine. And if you need to crank up the discard reporting with a discard log, I agree with Drew. You know, you're still going to have the guys trying to avoid yellowtail because of the overall or the sub-ACL issues. So I guess my question is around what is the discard reporting in place now, and can that be enhanced in order to get as much information as possible? At the same time, you're creating disincentives for irresponsible behavior. I think there's an opportunity to create more responsible behavior with this approach than the main motion, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do appreciate people's comments about the quality of the data. And I think that we got to this place because there were questions about the quality of the data, and there was hope that by making scallop vessels retain yellowtail, that it would improve the quality of the data. It has not done that. And in actuality, before we learn, and we've beat ourselves over the head a couple times, is you can't regulate stupidity. And, I mean, that's what we learned, is that even though everybody knows that we have no room here, we have no room for bad behavior in targeting yellowtail, that people will still do it. And it didn't improve the quality of the data. The data is still the same. The data is based on extrapolations from when you have an observer on the boat, whether you keep that fish or you discard that fish. And so there's no... I appreciate the fact that people want better data, but status quo is the status quo. It has not improved the data. The substitute motion makes no change to that one way or the other. The data will still be based on observers' extrapolations, and the scallop fishery has to live with that. Whether they agree with the extrapolations or an observer effect or not, that is what we will have to deal with. So, you know, it is what it is. And the bottom line is here that even though we can sit around the table and we can have these discussions, and we know that there is, you know, that all of the alternatives considered in our specification package for scallops that we'll be taking final action on in January estimate, project, that we don't have enough yellowtail to prosecute the scallop fishery, that, you know, it's a huge problem. So this is only about trying to say that, you know what, we can't regulate stupidity. Somebody, if you can keep it, somebody's going to keep it, and they're going to do something that makes no sense. It's illogical. I get that. We all get that. You know, companies that I work for, we participate in the bycatch avoidance program. All of our captains are on board, and we understand what we need to do. There are people out there that just are not complying with that program, and we have no room to increase our yellowtail. No room at all. And substitute motion at least moves us in a direction that does away with some bad behavior. So I would encourage people to support this motion, and this is not a data issue.
Okay, is there anybody who hasn't commented? Okay, I'm going to go to Mike, then to Tom, and then we're going to move the question.
Yeah, I think this has been a very a good discussion, but what I've heard is that the reason for opposing the substitute motion by those that oppose it is that they think that it'll somehow result in less data. They're just against discarding on, I'll call it moral grounds, but they're against discarding under any circumstances dead fish, and that maintaining the status quo holds people accountable. I agree with all of those philosophically, but I think in practice none of them hold. Is my bottom line. I haven't heard anything that says the data is going to be any better. I can think of reasons that it could be worse, but I'm not even sure about that. I just don't know on the data issue. I agree on the that we shouldn't be putting a bunch of dead fish in the ocean, but I don't see that unless you can enforce the current rule that achieves anything. And similarly with accountability, unless there's actually some way of enforcing, some way of actually making sure people don't discard when there is an observer on board, then it's an idealistic statement, but I see it has no teeth. Thank you.
Tom.
Thanks. I do see the need to move away from fish and pitch and away from zero possession as an important issue for this council to remain consistent and moving in the right direction on. I'm looking at the yellowtail flounder sub-ACL data for this year on the report run on the 10th. Taken all together in open areas, closed area 1 and 2, we've added up to about 5,000 pounds of kept yellowtail. I mean, I guess if there's bad actors that are a significant problem, our information isn't catching it. I mean, 5,000 pounds of yellowtail that's been kept out of 76,000 pounds. I mean, I don't see that this substitute motion gets us closer to understanding better this fleet's impacts on a depleted resource that we need to know more about. It seems very clear that we have some sort of observer effect going on when we're talking about an issue with bad actors in the fishery landing so much of this yellowtail, but taken all together, it doesn't amount to anything. I think this is the wrong way to go. To Mike's point, in terms of getting away from zero possession and moving towards accountability and better information, I think that is the overriding factor here. I haven't heard anything said today that would undercut my perspective and my support for moving in that direction. And this is one of many issues where just that concept and just that principle should be applied. So I'll oppose the motion to substitute and support the main motion.
Okay. Motion to substitute. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? I didn't see Frank. Can we do it again? I had a miscount. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Okay, the motion carries 9-8. Tom?
Before the council votes on the main motion as substituted, I think it would be helpful if the council would make a rationale and indicate how this motion will comply with National Standard 9, the requirement to minimize bycatch to the extent practicable. And so I think council members need to construct an argument around the practicability issue, which I could outline one for you, which would be something along the lines of the fact that there's a cap on overall catch of yellowtail flounder for the scallop fishery, but that, you know, efforts to convert all of that from discards to landings, or to convert part of that from discards to landings, is not practical because of the impacts it potentially has on scallop revenues and the harvesting the scallop resource. But it would be helpful to hear some arguments from council members to spell that out. It will make it easier for Jamie to write the rationale.
Mary Beth.
So I appreciate that, Tom, because I do think it is important that we are clear. And when you're harvesting scallops, that you have a pile of scallops on the deck and you have some yellowtail mixed in, and you know that when your time is limited at sea, you're on a day at sea, and you know, the crew is very focused on those scallops that you need to shuck that are worth, you know, $10 a pound to them when they hit the dock. The yellowtail end up in a pile and receive no attention. So it's not a product often that there's no economic incentive to deal with the yellowtail in a way that is a marketable fish. But in the long run, it really is about, you know, a limited amount of ACL, and we've seen from experience that, you know, as I mentioned before, that some people will target it if it's available, and that it will close a fishery that has great value to the nation. And so it is about the value to the nation of the scallop harvest and trying to you know, maximize your scallop catch while staying within a limited allocation of yellowtail. So that is really the primary issue here, is that we need to have enough yellowtail to harvest an extremely valuable resource to the nation, and this will, you know, it de-incentivize any targeting of yellowtail, and I'm not sure that I was totally clear on all that, and I hope that was helpful, and I guess that's all I have to say.
Tom.
I guess just a question on that. How does this motion or this measure disincentivize the catch of yellowtail if there, as Mary Beth said, there's no economic incentive to handle that? There's no economic incentive on a profitable scallop trip to handle yellowtail really at all. It's not entirely clear how this reduces bycatch of yellowtail at all or really significantly changes mortality based on what Mary Beth just said.
David, then Matt.
Yeah, let's not argue against the motion that passed. We're looking for some logic as to why we indeed believe that this action that we've taken has merit. I would suggest that we can reference number 3 in the important considerations, and that is, you know, some limited access vessels are targeting yellowtail flounder. That's going to have an increased yellowtail flounder catch with the negative impacts, meaning that it will trigger the AMs. So this effort, this initiative, this decision will reduce the probability of our getting those negative impacts because the AMs would be triggered. Also, I think we can be swayed and we can rely on one representative of the scallop industry who came to the microphone and made the point, and this point has been made at other meetings as well, that the scallop industry, the limited access vessels, do indeed believe that this particular decision that we have made will provide incentive, more incentive, for the vessels to continue to participate in the bycatch avoidance program. I believe that to be the case. And that is a very critical program that has paid dividends, big dividends, and frankly, I want to continue to provide the industry with all incentive to be very cooperative with this program, to increase participation, with the benefits being reduced bycatch discard of Georgia's Bank Yellowtail. So those are my two suggestions as to the logic, the defense of this particular decision.
Okay, just for everyone's clarification, this motion has not been passed yet. It's a motion to substitute it. We still need one more vote. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for reminding us of where the motion itself stood. I'm concerned, are we making management decisions based on economic bases? And if that's the case, then we're going to get into trouble with this. I'm not sold on the rationale of the disincentivization argument. I think the program itself is a bycatch avoidance program is successful. It is working, but it's a voluntary program, and that's problematic. So that issue, and are we allowing economics to creep in inappropriately into our considerations? I'm just raising that question openly.
Does anybody else wish to comment any further? Dave Preble.
The arguments that I'm hearing twist logic. To say that we can't legislate against stupidity is wrong. If there weren't speed limits, I'd drive 100 miles an hour. And I don't see this as being any different. I will not support this motion. At no time will I support dead discarding of fish.
Anyone further? Okay. To the main motion as substituted, those who support the main motion as substituted, please indicate so. Yeah, the main motion substitute carries 9-8. Oh, sorry, I jumped here. It's still going to carry, but those opposed. Okay, it still carries 9-8. Frank, you're on a roll.
Okay.
Okay, next is going to be the Gulf of Maine cod rebuilding strategy and American Place, which are on page 3 and 4 of the decision document. You'll find it on page 22 and 23 of the framework document. With that, we have a combined motion for both species, which I think is the one that's up there. Okay. To recommend that for sections 4.1.1, Gulf of Maine Cod Rebuilding Strategy, the council select option 2, sub-option B, which is the 10-year rebuilding plan for Gulf of Maine Cod, and option 3, sub-option B, rebuilding plan review analysis for Gulf of Maine Cod. And for section 4.1.2, American Place Rebuilding Strategy, option 2, sub-option C, the 10-year rebuilding plan for American Place, and option 3, sub-option B, rebuilding plan review and analysis for American Place and its preferred alternatives. And the rationale was that the committee didn't feel it wanted to be overly optimistic in their ability to rebuild these stocks, and with the track record, that it would take the full 10 years.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to comment? Dave?
David Gaethel, Fishing Vessel Island, Diane. On the Gulf of Maine cod, I'd like to know what the rationale is for 10 years instead of 10 years plus one mean generation. I don't believe I don't believe you can get there from here in 10 years if you keep the reference points where they are right now in the regime we're in. You know, it wasn't even explored at the committee level. I don't think it's been explored anywhere, really. And just saying flat out we're going to do 10 years, what do we do when we get to year 8 and we go, well, we can't get there from here again? I mean, I think we ought to at least be realistic here and pick something that might actually be doable.
David?
Yeah, David has raised a good point, especially since if natural mortality remains high, doesn't drop back down to a lower level, we're not going to achieve our rebuilding target in 8 or 10 years for that matter. I do tend to believe that natural mortality will continue to be high in light of the number of predators out there preying on codfish and environmental factors. There's a lot working against our efforts to rebuild Gulf of Maine cod, unfortunately. My support for the longer time frame was due in not going with a strategy similar to what David just suggested, is my being a bit of an optimist regarding what might happen with Magnuson Act reauthorization and the possibility, I think it's a good possibility, that the recommendations of the National Research Council may be entertained by Congress, maybe even by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and that we should not be tying our wagon, hitching our horses to a wagon that's not going to be moving too far. That is, we should not continue to rely on hitting biomass targets, that we should be focused on fishing mortality targets. There's a lot in that particular document that makes a great deal of sense. Congress has listened very carefully to the National Research Council in the past on other things, and I suspect this will also be very influential. So, you know, 8 years down the road, we may have to revisit it if indeed Congress decides not to make a change. But anyways, the longer time period makes sense. I think we're going to get away from biomass targets. Again, the optimist in me. So going with the strategy that David suggested complicates matters dramatically. I don't think it would be approvable, especially in light of the fact that the scientific community seems to think, I believe this is the case, that natural mortality will drop back down to lower levels and we can achieve our biomass targets. But I disagree with that contention. So that's why I did not support David Gethel's suggestion and why I went with the longer time period. At least one reason why I did.
Does anybody else in the audience wish to comment? Back to the council. Seeing none. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 16-01. Frank?
Okay. The next one is annual catch limits, which is on page 5 of the decision document. Page 25 of the framework document. Recommend that for section 4.1.3, annual catch limits, the council select option 2, revised annual catch limit specification, as the preferred alternative.
Committee motion does not need a second. Any comments from the audience?
And that passed 9-0-0. Just for
seeing none, back to the council. Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed, and those who are abstaining. Motion carries 16-01. Frank?
Okay, thank you. Okay. Next is small mesh fisheries accountability measures, which is on page 6 of the document and page 35 of the framework document. This has to do with basically the whiting fishery on Georgia's. Recommend that for the section 4.2.1, small mesh fisheries accountability measures, that the council select option 2, sub-option B2. If sub-ACL for Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder was exceeded, Selective Gears and Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder Stockyard as the preferred alternative. That passed the committee. This one was a little more contentious. It was 5-4-0. The difference between, I think, sub-option, was it A and B or 1 and 2? I think it's 1 would require, and I hope I get this correct. Oh, Jamie, you want to help me out?
Jamie.
Sure. There was quite a bit of discussion at this at the committee level. The option that's presented here, sub-option B, would have an approved selective gear being required for fish with small mesh gear in the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder stock area when the small mesh fishery sub-ACL was exceeded. The other one that was discussed was if the total ACL and the sub-ACL was exceeded, and that's option B1. There seemed to be a lot of discussion about amongst the committee on which of those two they preferred.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Comments from the audience? Maggie? Then Bonnie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We support the committee's motion. I think it's important to hold the fishery accountable for their catch of groundfish. If not, then that catch will have to come out of, the groundfish fleet will suffer as a result of that. So we need to start looking at, you know, all these fisheries. You passed a motion yesterday to do that, to look at all of these other fisheries and their bycatch of groundfish, and that's a good thing. We need to do that, and we need to hold those fisheries accountable. We have a situation going into the coming fishing year where the southern windowpane flounder ACL was exceeded by fisheries other than groundfish, and yet the groundfish fleet is bearing the accountability measure for that. That has to stop, and we need to hold the fishery accountable for their catch of groundfish. Thank you.
Bonnie.
Hi, good morning. What Long Island particularly, because we have a rather vibrant whiting fishery still, is not that we don't want to necessarily hold anyone not accountable for their sub-ACL, but with the other fisheries involved, at least the grasp of it that I'm trying to have, not only must the sub-ACL be exceeded, but also the total ACL in order for the AMs to be in place. I believe that's in place for groundfish. I believe that's in place for scallops. And so the conceptual idea is moving forward to hold everyone to the same standard and not be prejudicial toward one fishery over another. And just because you've got a lot more fisheries that are going to be going down this road, to create some path where they all remain consistent would be appreciated. Thank you.
Dave.
David Gaethel, Fish and Vessel, Ellen Diane. I don't have an opinion of this particular motion one way or the other, but I do have an opinion on the overall idea here, and that, to me, is problematic, potentially. As you divide these fisheries up into more and more sub-ACLs, the net result is leaving a lot of fish on the table. It's underfishing across the board, because every time somebody gets close to it, it gets shut down. And I also think you're going to run into consistency problems when somebody who's politically powerful comes in and says, hey, our sub-ACL is exceeded. We don't want to be shut down. They still got fish left. Let's get some over there. So I think the council needs to set a policy across the board that either it's done this way, where every single fishery is held accountable for their own sub-ACL, or it's the other way, that you're only accountable if the total ACL is exceeded. I could see huge problems coming here in the very near future, and I'll give you one right up front. The recreational fishery is probably going to exceed its Gulf of Maine haddock quota by an enormous quantity this year. And there's a possibility that the entire quota will not be exceeded. So are you going to shut down the recreational fishery next year because of that? It's no different. You know, in this case, you've got a small fishery that is politically not very powerful, that it's pretty easy to stomp on. But you're going to have powerful fisheries coming in here shortly, whether it's the scallop fishery, which just flexed its muscle, or the recreational fishery, which will flex its muscle, or some other politically powerful group. And if you are inconsistent in dealing with this, I would think you'd be open to legal challenge.
Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. As you know, we have a lot of members that depend on the Georges Bank yellowtail stock. We also have members that depend on the whiting fishery. We support this motion. If we're interpreting it correctly, the way we see this, this doesn't stop a potential overage of the small mesh from going into the overall TAC. It doesn't do that. It just determines when you trigger the accountability measure, but there's no way to pay that fish back. So the difference between one and two is fairly subtle. The only difference is when you require the gear modification. That's the only difference. There's no mathematical difference in the cost of the fish, of the overage to the overall yellowtail U.S.-Canada accountability measure. It's the same. And so we support that at this point because the gear modification is important. I know a lot of the vessels that are fishing there are working hard at that. A lot of them are voluntarily using the gear on Georges Bank all the time now. One of the questions that we have or something that we'd want to point out is an accountability measure says that it requires the gear modification, but to my knowledge, the gears aren't yet approved on Georges Bank. So that's sort of an emergency. You've got a year to do that, but we've got to get that gear approved on there. Otherwise, you could have a shutdown of the whiting fishery on Georges Bank, and that's what we really need to avoid. So we support this. We support the gear modification AM. And we hope that the council puts it on their radar screen to urge folks to do whatever needs to be done at the research steering committee or whatever to make sure that we get these gears approved in Georges Bank.
Anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, we'll start with Tom, go right around the table.
Yeah, I support this motion, and I think the difference here with regards to the trigger point is just a gear modification. We heard loud and clear that we didn't want a closure alternative. We didn't want an area-based closure. So this, you know, this selective gear AM, it's not the end of the world. And I think if the whiting fishery, the small mesh fishery, exceeds their sub-ACL, then they should be mandated to use the selective gear. And we have to work with the agency and the fishery to get those gears approved. But I don't see any real strong rationale to put that off in the event that the small mesh fishery exceeds their sub-ACL, but the overall ACL isn't adjusted. They're catching too much, and they should switch to the selective gear that a number of them have already stated publicly they support, approve, and some of them even use. And we had whiting fishermen at the Groundfish Committee meeting say, we should do this tomorrow. We should just all start using this approved gear. Yeah, I agree. So I just don't see building in that sort of flexibility at the tail end and tying it to the exceeding the overall ACL. The small mesh fisheries exceed their sub-ACL, then they should all be using the selective gear. I don't think that's the end of the world. I think it's the right way to go.
Terry, Ellen, Mary Beth.
Yeah, I agree with Tom. I mean, sub-ACLs, everybody in the fishery has a sub-ACL, including the groundfish fishery. And we all are expected to live within our means. I mean, if our sector goes over on its sub-ACL, we're shut down right now. We don't have a gear modification option. We're stopped from fishing. And we're the only ones with an accountability measure on flounder catch. So, I think everybody else needs to be held accountable to their bycatch issues.
Ellen.
I have a point of clarification. What happens, and I guess this is for the service, what happens if this is approved and there are no approved gears and the sub-ACL is exceeded?
Who's the volunteer?
Yeah, so this has been an ongoing discussion this fall, and we've pulled in our folks that work on cooperative research in the regional office. There are approved gears right now. There are concerns like whether the raised foot rope works in the deeper waters out on George's. I think there's some concern that it does not. So there are three new gear types that are undergoing evaluation. I know Cornell is doing some work. They're doing some additional tows to try to bring some of those gears online, and that's ongoing now. And so we've started talking about how to get those to the Research Steering Committee, and Tom might be able to speak to that process of getting those gears online.
Tom.
So I think there's a couple things here. The first is that, Jamie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the proposed measure in the framework document includes several gears that would be authorized to be used. There's some question about whether those gears actually work in the deeper water and work on George's Bank. We've heard conflicting information over the last 2 years about whether that's the case or not. But as Sarah pointed out, the framework document also refers to the process that we have set up for approving additional gears, which we've used repeatedly for other gears to get them incorporated into the management plan. And it involves conducting an experiment under certain conditions, which are described in the regulations, and then bringing that information forward to the Research Steering Committee, which reviews the experiment, and then we pass it off to the agency to implement those gears. So there already is a process to get additional gears if those ones that are identified in the action are not actually going to work. And that process typically takes, well, depending on the experiments in place, but that process to get it through and approved takes, I don't know if anybody's here from, once we receive the experiment, I think it takes 6 months maybe. I think the last time we did it, it was about 6 or 8 months total by the time we reviewed the experiment and you guys implemented it. Yeah. Yeah.
Mary Beth. Bob. Ellen.
Sorry, Mary Beth. So the answer to my question is that there are three gears in the document that are approved already.
Well, they would be approved to meet the requirements of this AM, assuming the whole thing got approved. Yes.
Okay. So there are three gears, even though they may not work.
Right.
I guess my then the second part of the question is any gears that would work probably would not be approved before this went into effect. I know. I just wanted
to... Well, let Jamie answer this one. I don't think that's right.
So one thing that the PDT pointed out, that there's a timing issue with how this AM could potentially be triggered. So because the timing and availability of data in the fishery, the AM could be implemented in the fishing year following the notification of overage. So there may be, depending on how much, when this actually gets implemented, there may be a year or so. And the consideration of additional gears could be done in that during that time as well.
Okay, I just want to pin this down because I want this to go out to the public with definite information. Worst case scenario, it could possibly be that the gears would not be approved by the time it went into effect.
Jamie.
New gears, right? There are ones that are listed in the document.
Okay, thank you.
Mary Beth.
So I think, you know, I understand the value of having AMs that would implement more selective gear. I think there's value to that. The concern I have, however, is that we are making decisions on these types of measures piecemeal, and we're not consistent. And, you know, in some cases we say, well, okay, you know, we like these people better, so we're only going to implement an AM if the total ACL is exceeded. And then other cases we say, nah, we don't like these people so much, so we're going to do it this way. And it's really kind of a funky way to go about it. And so the discussion yesterday about taking a broader look at all groundfish, incidental and bycatch and other fisheries, and evaluating it in total and perhaps creating some policies that are consistent, I supported that. We as a council supported that yesterday under priorities. And so I just feel that we are, again, piecemeal making decision, and by saying that you're going to implement, in this case, it's a gear modification. It perhaps doesn't have, you know, as negative an impact as a pound-for-pound payback, for instance, but we're saying, you know, that if they exceed the sub-ACL, but the total ACL isn't exceeded, we're going to implement an AM. So let's imagine that it was a pound-for-pound payback. You know, we have a mandate to try to achieve optimum yield in our fisheries. And so in other instances for sub-ACLs, for example, the herring fishery and the haddock sub-ACL, it's not a pound-for-pound payback, but it closes the fishery when the total ACL, we are so far off the mark, it's unbelievable. So just, you know, on the whole thing of consistency and when AMs should be implemented and when they should not be implemented, even though I recognize selective gear has value, I will not support the motion.
Mike?
Yeah, I share the same concern that David Gaethel expressed and that Mary Beth has just expressed about consistency, and I think it's a really serious issue. I have another concern about AMs that's a very general concern, and that is how they perform in terms of improving this condition of the stock. I understand their significance and importance in terms of accountability, but there's another implication, and that's what do they do to the fish stock? And we're dealing with a situation where we all acknowledge that there's uncertainty in the stock assessments, and that means there could be more or less fish than the stock assessment says. The way AMs work is if there are less fish, you can have a higher fishing mortality than you expect, and there's no action taken to correct for that. Whereas if there are more fish, you would typically trigger an AM, that is, you would catch more fish than were anticipated. Even though fishing mortality wasn't necessarily higher than expected, it could actually be lower, but you trigger an AM to try and get it even lower yet. So essentially it sets up a system that actually has a feedback that doesn't work to stabilize, but does just the opposite. So I have a great deal of skepticism about those sort of situations. Having said that, and being very sympathetic towards this consistency argument and having this general concern, I will support this specific action because I do think the advantage of moving towards more selective gear is something we should support. Thank you.
Vincent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I supported this motion at committee, and I support it now. And the reason is because this is what the industry asked for. They asked for the selective gears to get into place as soon as possible. And I think you have to remember is the small allocation, the small sub-ACL that they're going to have in this fishery. And they can't afford to catch hardly any yellowtail. That's really what this comes down to. I believe the sub-allocation is going to be far less than 10,000 pounds. So what are they going to do next year after that? I have a very big problem with the consistency portion of this also. And I think we have to start asking ourselves the question, how are we going to do this? Because we're all in a fight for fish. There's not enough fish to go around. So if we are not going to honor our sub-ACLs, why spend all our time setting them? Why spend all our time debating them? Let's just wait until we blow it out of the water, and then we've shut down the stock area. Is that the direction the council wants to go? I support this because it's not a closure of the small mesh fishery, but it does put the accountability on them to fish cleanly. Industry told us that they can do it. Industry wants to do it. This is the quickest way to get that done. That's why I support the motion. Thank you.
Frank and Jeff.
Yes, thank you. And Bonnie may be able to help me out here, but we don't have anybody here from the traditional whiting fishery today. And I think they would probably support this 100% if we had limited entry. I think the concerns we heard from the boats that were offshore were they can fish fairly clean. They want to fish clean because they're worried about the fishery for next year. Their concern is that other boats are going to come in. They're not going to be that selective. The AM is going to be triggered. And then the traditional boats, which there aren't very many, there's probably just a handful of boats, they're concerned that when the AMs actually get triggered, it's going to affect, you know, just a handful of boats. And I'm pretty sure they had no problem at all with this if there was the limited entry. And I don't know if anybody else could speak. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the fact that it is an open access fishery is part of the reason why I think the industry, at least that we've talked to, support B2. I think this consistency, which is the one that B1, that the one that would not trigger the AM until the total ACL was caught. Now maybe with yellowtail it's going to be a small ACL. Maybe it's really just an academic discussion, but it was pretty clear that they felt that the treatment here should be the same as in 48 as far as window pane goes. I think in window pane, the sub-ACL for the large mesh fluke fishery isn't triggered until the window pane ACL is met. So, I mean, so we're having a really difficult time trying to read the tea leaves and identify which approach is going to be taken here. So I understand the motion was 5-4 in support of this, very close. I've been listening to people around the table. This motion will probably pass, but it is over the objection of the fleet that's out there that feels that they shouldn't be dinged. And I know it's a gear modification AM, and we certainly appreciate this council supporting that approach. But this is inconsistent with the approach you took in 48, in terms of the implications of on window pane. And if we as a council are going to go back and develop fluke AMs that are conservationally equivalent to yours in the groundfish plan and try to move it into our fluke plan, we're likely to come back and argue that the sub-ACL shouldn't be triggered. The sub-ACL consequence should not be triggered until the total ACL is taken. So we're having a really difficult time why this is any different than the treatment of the window pane ACL, sub-ACL. So so as far as the gear modification process goes, I was told yesterday morning that the Cornell work is underway using a large mesh belly panel approach in the deep water, and that is the issue. This gear has been used in the shallow water but not offshore, so how much difference is that going to make? Nobody really knows, but they are cranked up and moving right now. I think in February they're going to do the trials, so hopefully that process will be quick enough to allow the AM to kick in and give these fellows an opportunity to fish out there. I think the report that we're getting is 85% of the flounder is reduced in the use of this gear. So, I guess on behalf of the folks in the Mid-Atlantic, we would prefer B1. And I appreciate the opportunity to say that. Thank you.
Doug.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I came to this meeting seeing the inconsistency between this motion and what some of the motions we put in Framework 48 and was going to support any kind of change back to option B1. However, hearing some of the discussion around this table about the fact that there are gears already approved here that could be implemented, and the potential that we do have some time to have additional gears approved, where this would certainly support gear selectivity and avoidance with gear of the yellowtail. I'm willing to support this now. Thank you.
Are there any other comments? Terry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, the industry was at the groundfish meet, well, a couple of the guys anyway, and they supported because they're towing those particular nets now and making a living doing it. Something Jeff just said about the large mesh belly panels. I mean, we used to have that in the shrimp fishery, and I thought it was a really smart thing, and it worked well, and we did the research on my boat with cameras, and, you know, that's the best way to get rid of flounders. So, I mean, I think we're close to being able to implement something.
Any further comment? Jamie?
I just wanted to highlight something in the discussion document. On September 9th, there was a memo that was produced by both the Whiting AP and the Squid Mackerel Butterfish Advisory Panel. They met jointly, and they developed, this AP has developed a series of recommendations. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about consistency, but as you're making your decisions, I just want to point out that the joint APs, when they met, what they were supporting was an alternative that would trigger AMs only if the total ACL and the sub-ACLs exceeded. I think the discussions that we heard at the committee level previously, the past committee and the committee meeting before, were contrasting a Georges Bank yellowtail flounder stock area closure versus using a gear as an AM. And so it wasn't so much that they were contrasting B1 with B2, but it was really sub-option A with those two options under B.
Okay, there's one more gentleman in the audience that has not commented, and then we're going to move the question. Come on up, sir.
Tom Testaverde, Fish and Vessel, Midnight Sun, Gloucester, Mass. I'd like to just say that I'd like to have the raised foot rope, one of the approved nets. I've chased whiting. Well, I've been whiting fishing since 8 years old with my dad, and anywhere from Boone Island all the way down to Hudson Canyon. And since the raised foot rope has been approved, when we did it, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was, I've used it every place. I've used it in 160 fathom, my deepest. And I've caught, probably that year there, I probably pulled 700,000 pounds of whiting out of an area in a few months. And I don't know who's using it down south who don't know how to use it, but I don't think they know what they're doing. Now, it works good. The idea is to get over the flounders, catch the whiting. When you're nitpicking for a few whiting, it's you're not getting them all. But I'd rather do that than chase groundfish that I don't have to buy or anything like that, you know. I just want to scrape out a living, and that's it. So I'd love to have the raised foot rope as one of the approved nets. And I've used it on George's Bank. The only time you have a little difficulty catching a few flounders is when you get a strong tide, 2.5 knots, 3 knots, and the wires are out to the side of the boat. You can't help it, but the wings lay down a little, and you're scooping a little more than you should. And if you tow too fast, you just pull the net off the bottom, and you literally catch nothing when you get that strong tide. So you got to go fair tide sometimes. It's like other nets, but it's a great net. I think it works good. I just want to go on record of saying that. And like I say, the range, I've been down the Hudson Canyon, caught squid with it, whiting, everything. It does work. It could be modified a little. It's not a whiting vacuum cleaner that you just get whiting. But I tell you, my old man might be rolling over his grave because there would have been a lot of less crippled fishermen instead of culling out all that stuff that we used to catch, you know, the old ways. So I think it's a good thing. I think it should be put on there instead of any kind of closures of the areas. Like I say, I volunteer and I use it every place. Thank you.
Helen.
Oh, I have a question for Tom. The two options that we've been discussing here were sub-option B1 and B2. The one that's on the right there is B2, and that would require you to use an approved gear if your sub ACL was exceeded, and the B1 is if the total ACL and the sub ACL was exceeded. So my question for you is, do you have an opinion on which one of those you would prefer? Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I did.
If that's coming up to, I don't want to see the area closed.
Okay. They both require the same gear modification. One would probably shut it down, may possibly shut it down more quickly than the other, or put in into the required gear than the other. So since you're fishing with that gear anyway,
right,
it doesn't make a difference.
I use it voluntarily, so okay, the product is better and everything else. You know, you don't get sculpins, you don't get as many skates and all that stuff like that. So
thank
I just
you.
Want to see keep fishing. And this keeps us off regulated groundfish, because otherwise I'd be catching groundfish. Sometimes one toe, you know, with the flounder net, I can get more yellowtail than I catch all year with a raised foot rope. One toe, if you're on that area. So what we're doing is keeping boats off the groundfish. We should be rewarded, not hurt. You know, like what happened already when we went whiting fishing, we didn't get our groundfish quota, and we got hurt. So now we're into a different fisheries. And yes, I would like to see limited entry too.
Okay, thank you. Back to the council. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? The motion carries 15-0. Frank?
Okay. Next one is right. Small mesh call-in, which would be carrying its motion number 4. And it's on page 7 of the document and page 36 of the framework document. Okay. Recommend that for section 4.2.2, small mesh fisheries measures, that the council select option 2, call-in requirement for small mesh fisheries as the preferred alternative. This passed the committee 5-4-0. The rationale was the call-in system would be established to better allow observers to cover the fishery and for coverage to be expanded if there was a change in funding.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Comments from the audience? Dave?
David Gaethel, Fishing Vessel, Ellen Diane. Again, I don't fish here, so I don't have a direct dog in this fight, but I would remind the council that you have a couple of outstanding issues here. One is the fact that this is an open access fishery, and if you don't have a groundfish permit or some kind of limited access permit that requires VMS, you basically have no way of checking for compliance with this regulation. In other words, somebody can just go out there and fish. How are you going to know whether they called in or not? Because you won't have VMS positioning them out there. So I think you need to do several things here. One is, and you probably can't do it in this amendment, I mean in this framework, but you're going to have to require VMS for boats fishing in the Georges Bank broadstock area with small mesh. That's number one, because then you'll have some way of verifying where these people actually are. The second issue is for the call-in, the whiting fishery, even though it's a trip fishery in this area, is basically still a day boat fishery. So you're going to have to find some way of modifying this so that people can call in. They're going to have to register basically every day, which is going to be administratively probably burdensome for the observer program, but it's the only way they're going to be able to fish. So you're going to need to do something like you do right now with the day boat groundfish boats, which is, you know, you can register for 9 days at a crack, because that's what they're going to do. They're going to call in every single day during the time that they fish out there. Another thing I would suggest you might want to consider to fish in the Georges Bank broadstock area as a bridge to when you can require VMS for anybody fishing there is a letter of authorization requirement, where you have to get a letter of authorization to fish in the area. That would at least give you a list of the participants in the fishery. Because the call-in alone, again, you're just not going to have any way of enforcing this.
Other comments from the audience? Fido.
Yeah, we spoke with some of our members on this, and we want to support what David just said. That the whiting fishery, even though a lot of times it's a multi-day trip, needs to be treated like a day boat fishery. So you got to. I'm assuming that the PTNS system always accommodates the advance notice that's afforded to groundfish vessels and squid vessels. We want to make sure that the whiting fleet, if they're required to do the PTN and this gets voted up, that they're allowed to do that 9-day advance notice, and they don't have that 48-hour requirement, because that would totally cripple the whiting fishery. So I think there are others that want to say the same thing. So if there's someone at NIMS that would know right off, if they're calling into the same system and they have that option, it goes without saying, then great. Then our concerns are you know, all set. But if not, if it's something that has to be explicit in the regulation that says that you're allowed to have this 9-day advance notice that the squid fishery and groundfish day boats are allowed to do, then you might want to go on record as saying that.
Tom.
Just want to go on record and say I support any kind of VMS for anybody who goes whiting fishing and all that there. Got to know where they are and what they're doing. Because a lot of people, boats that never went whiting fishing have been jumping in more. And I don't think they know what they're doing. I'm not speaking for them, but that they don't know what they're doing. But I think people are confused. So I think a VMS would be a good thing. And that 9-day call-in, I think, would help us a little.
Bonnie.
We support also some type of PTNS system. I don't know specifically, because it doesn't refer to what type of call-in is involved, and something that similar to the squid fishery would be very good. And I know at the committee meeting, because the concern was, and I have to confirm what Frank was saying before, everyone at the committee meeting was discussing the limited entry option, and that's been a huge issue for whiting forever. And I know that Vince had discussed about wanting to know who the participants were in the fishery. So if it requires both PTNS and or some type of LOA to get a grasp as to who's there right now, well, we support that. Thank you.
Is there anybody else? George?
Yeah, we expressed concern at the committee, and we'll say it again. We have some doubts as to whether the benefits of this outweigh the workload on the observer program. Observer program staff have indicated that there would be a substantial additional workload associated with this, and we still have some concerns as to whether the benefits of this really are worth it.
Okay, you're going to start at the end of the table, go around again. Start with Jeff, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's an awful lot of questions around how this would be applied in this fishery, and as George just said, you know, it's there is no measurable benefit, that's what the document says, and the people that have been calling me since they knew I was going to be at the table today have asked support the no action alternative. I think there's a lot of questions. I'm not sure what the benefits are going to be in this case. It may not be something that is appropriate at this time. I think there's a lot of questions in the minds of the fleet about how this would work. You've heard some of that from the audience. So my preference would be to vote this down and support the no action alternative option one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
PK.
Well, to George's point, I mean, I think the benefit is, and I mean, I know Terry will speak to this too, but it's you know who's there, you know what they're doing, and Tom just said that. You know, you'd like to know who's doing it, where they are, what they're doing. I mean, Terry can speak to that. He went whiting fishing and never even had to call in. He was shocked that he didn't have to call in. So, you know, if it was limited entry, it'd be a little bit different. But right now, there's, you know, there's no accountability for who's doing what out there. And this gives it a chance to see who's actually going whiting fishing.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had great discussion about this at committee. And I do agree with the service that the PTNS is probably not the best way to go. But the problem is that we have to do something here. This fishery is not monitored broadly. Okay, there's only 20 or 30 full-time participants or long-term participants that are always observed. They're called constantly. We had testimony from two or three of the people at the committee that they thought that the observers were part of their crew. They were with them so much. But then we had other people that were going with no observer coverage whatsoever. Okay, we used to have a letter of authorization to participate in any smallmouth fishery. Okay, since Amendment 5, a lot of those restrictions have been cut back, so we don't know. So I would be more than happy to vote this down if we could work together with the service and come up with a program that helps get a handle on how many people are participating in this fishery and to consistently monitor the entire fishery instead of just a few. And those are the few that actually probably fish the cleanest, because they're long-term participants. They've learned how to do this. As you heard the gentleman say earlier about the raised foot rope trawl, it gives you a better product. You don't want to be on your hands and knees all day. The inshore fishery is prosecuted in the heat in the summertime. The number one thing you want to do is get your fish off deck and in ice under deck. You don't want to be sitting there catching sorting bycatch. So what we need to do is come up with a comprehensive monitoring program for this fishery. Now, I understand that this more burden on the service with less resources. I get that. But we're going down a path with Framework 51 that we're putting accountability measures on a fishery that we're not monitoring properly. So we need to come up with something, and this was the only program that we have today in place in order to start, and it is already mandated for the squid fishery in southern New England. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
I'll be very brief. I just really wanted to support Vinny's comments here. Unless we move this measure forward, there is no way to target observer coverage to this fishery. And questions have come up at different times, and we request data from the observer program, and it's difficult to get, you know, firm answers, because unless you have people notifying someone that they're going fishing and they're going for whiting, it's very hard to get at. So I just wanted to support Vinny's comments here.
Ellen.
I have a lot of comments. My first is a comment to George about increased observer need. A lot of the people who are doing the whiting fish, prosecuting the whiting fishery, already call in. We have the squid fishery, which calls in, so they are being observed, and the herring. Anyone who lands more than a pound of herring has to declare into a herring day, and therefore is under the herring observer program. So you have a lot of these boats are being observed now, and I think you're not looking at as big of an increase in observer days as you may think. I've said all along that the whiting fleet has been listed as herring boats for years, and most of them catch very, very little herring. But if they want to land any of it and not discard it, which is something the guys don't like doing, then they have to declare into that herring day. So that's just a thought for the service. My next thought is a motion to amend, and that would be, I'm sorry, Karen, I didn't get it to you ahead of time. If a PTN is required for small mesh fisheries in the Georges Bank yellowtail flounder stock area, and in parentheses 522, 525, 561, or 562, the parentheses, the small mesh fishery should be afforded the 9-day PTN advance notice option currently allowed for the squid and day boat groundfish fisheries. If I have a second, I'll speak to it.
You second it, Doug? Second by Doug Grout?
I as we've heard, they don't have any problem with calling in, but it is basically a day boat, even though it can be a trip, multi-day trip. It is a day boat thing, depending on when the buyer calls in and tells you how much you need to do. So this would allow them to continue fishing. Without this, they would have to come into shore, and that would curtail the fishery. On top of that, just for I have been told that a VMS requirement and an LOA would not be we would not be able to put it into this measure, and I just wanted to double check with that. Those are not things that we can add here, correct? Is that correct? Okay, so I think that should be a priority in the Whiting Committee to do those. Obviously, the fishery is in favor of that, and I think everyone at the table is. So I'll leave this to someone else. If you have any questions, let me know.
Comments on the motion to amend? Tom? Terry?
Yeah, I can support the motion to amend. I think this improves the feasibility or the functionality of the program. I think, you know, the underlying issue, and there are two, we're, as Vinton said, we're trying to sort of solve this in a comprehensive way, and the PTNS, you know, adopting that call-in system only gets at one aspect of that, and that's the observer randomization. And I think we've heard from a number of folks that we have a real problem with the randomness of the observer coverage in this fishery, and it's probably undermining the information that we're getting about this fishery. That's what the PTNS system allows us to do, and that's effectively all it allows us to do. And I think the improvements in that the data quality justify the costs. So I support moving this measure forward. I also support what Ellen finished by saying, and that is addressing the rest of this in perhaps our Whiting specifications package in terms of, you know, other measures to get a handle on shifts in effort or activity in this fleet. PTNS doesn't do the entire job. I think there are some other common sense measures that we could do in our Whiting action that we're going to be working on this year. So I'd support that as well.
There's been some ongoing discussion at the committee and a couple things that came up at the Groundfish Committee over the last two meetings, and I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. A pre-trip notification system does not increase your observer coverage. The only thing a call-in requirement does is it helps with the deployment of observers. And so if you have a problem with how observer coverage is being apportioned across your fleet, or you don't think it's not truly random, then a PTNS call-in requirement would address that issue. The Groundfish Committee raised this on Monday, and we don't know if that's necessarily a problem with the small mesh fleet right now. We've heard concerns from industry that there might be an issue. There's analysis that could be done to compare VTR data to the observer data to be able to tell if it is an issue. If it is an issue, I think PTNS then would serve that purpose. But we don't know if it's that analysis hasn't been done, so we don't necessarily know if that's an issue or not. The other issue that came up at the Groundfish Committee was we want to know who's fishing out there because it's an open access fishery. Again, a PTNS call-in requirement doesn't necessarily get you there. In the SBRM process, the observer providers have a mechanism they use to identify what vessels are actively fishing in an open access fishery. And so at the beginning of the year, they get a vessel list based on past history of who is operating in that fishery. But the area coordinators are also paying attention if there's new vessels coming into the fishery during the year, and it's their responsibility to make sure those vessels are also getting coverage. So in terms of being able to identify trips, a PTNS isn't going to necessarily get you there. So I just wanted to clarify what a PTNS system is actually going to do. And I think there's analysis that we can do to be able to look at whether the randomness of observer coverage is an issue. We just haven't done that yet, so we don't know.
Terry.
Yeah, I'm glad you called on Sarah because we had a conversation exactly about that the other day. That's why I had voted for the original motion at the committee, and I was going to make a motion to amend it to an LOA so that we would actually have a handle on who was going to attempt to do it. And it sounded like the PTNS part of it wasn't
the way to go with it. So, I mean, I would support an LOA, but I don't think I could support this now because of hearing what Sarah had said about it would be cumbersome. And Sarah, could you talk about what Mike Palmer told you about the fellow that does the programming on the website and what the advantage, what the disadvantage of that was?
I think you might be speaking to the workload issue of how much work is involved in adding an FMP to the PTNS. I know right now the Observer program, and Dr. Karp is probably more familiar with this than I am, but we added some new fisheries to the call-in requirements this past year. GenCat scallops were added, longfin was added, and I think the Observer program is doing the best they can to keep up with that. They're manning that call-in system 24/7 with cell phones. So I think there was some concern with the workload required to program another FMP into the PTNS, but then also to man that system, adding another fishery. It's a workload issue, and if we don't know that there's a problem yet of the randomness of the observer coverage, we don't know if there's any measurable benefit of adding a PTNS requirement for the small mesh fleet.
Terry.
So the preference would be, for me, would be have an LOA to figure out who we have going out there, and so the observer coordinators could actually know who is in the system to do it, and then, you know, figure out the PTNS part of it at a later date. But I mean, at least get the LOA out there so that we'll know who's going, you know, without a minimum participation time. At least the coordinators would have an idea. They wouldn't have to go around the docks and figure out who might be going whiting fishing instead of ground fishing. So my whole thing was we had no idea who was fishing. And you could just unrig, take your ground fish gear off and go to George's with a 3-inch mesh. And if we wanted to go there with a 6.5-inch mesh, we had to give 48 hours notice to a calling system. So, I just think that we need to get a handle on who exactly is going out there and doing it.
Doug. So I seconded this because if we were going to require the call-in, based on some of the public comment, this was a very important aspect of it. But then in hearing what Sarah was commenting on, it sounded like as far as getting a frame of who is in the fishery that we may not need this, that you feel the observers, companies can somehow know without any, know exactly who's going to be participating in this fishery? How do they do this? They just go around the docks and ask people? Do you really think we'll have a full frame from which to base it on without something like this?
George?
I think the answer is we don't know, and I don't think Bill knows either, just off the top of our heads. We could find out, but we don't know right now.
So wouldn't this, at least by having a requirement to call in, help out in gathering who's in that frame?
Let the person know the answer.
Just one more point to respond to that. You know, I had mentioned before, PTNS is not going to increase your observer coverage, and I think right now we are not missing trips because we don't know trips are we don't know that trips aren't happening. We're missing trips because of a lack of funding. And again, I think this is something that Dr. Karp would know more about, but we know that the trips are happening. That's I don't think that's the issue here of why vessels might not be getting coverage.
I'll get to you eventually, Terry. Vincent, then Mike, then Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, all we have to do is call Charlie, and he can tell us everything. Charlie is the observer who works out of Gloucester, who pretty much handles the small mesh. He's got about 5 or 10 of us on speed dial from Portland to Gloucester, and he goes fishing with us. And he pretty much knows everybody that does the small mesh fishing in the area. I do agree, Sarah, that you do know the trips. Because although this is an open access fishery, remember, you still have to have some sort of a federal permit in order to prosecute it. If you don't have a multi-species permit, you have to have an open access northeast small mesh multi-species permit. And you are still required to do your trip reports and all the other stuff that we all do. So from that standpoint, they do know what's happening for the most part, as long as everybody's reporting, of course. My question is to the services. We have about roughly six exempted small mesh fisheries, from the cultivated shoals to the main great fishery. All right, we require LOAs for three of them, the two around Cape Cod and the cultivated shoals. Okay, is it within our discretion to ask you to issue LOAs for the other three remaining? Is that something that we can do?
Sure. Your question is, can you do it in this action?
Yes.
I think I'd have to ask Gene that question. The question basically is, if the council wanted to get a better handle on who was fishing in this fishery, could they ask us to require letters of authorization through this framework?
Are you asking whether that's a frameworkable measure? I mean,
well, I guess two part. Is it frameworkable, and if so, is it okay to add it at this point in the framework?
Yeah, I think
process?
It's probably frameworkable. you know, it presents a PRA issue, Paperwork Reduction Act issue. I don't know if you're asking if there's enough analysis of such a requirement. I mean, conceptually, there's nothing wrong with adding the council requesting this. The fact that this might impose an additional burden on the fishermen that hasn't been previously proposed or analyzed presents a problem, but I'm not sure it rises to the level that you couldn't add it at this point.
So that's a lukewarm yes?
No, I don't know the answers to all those questions.
I would take that as a lukewarm yes, and this would be instead of the PTNS call-in?
Well, I'm trying to find a solution to this.
Yes.
All right. I do not want to vote something through that's just not going to work. There's no sense wasting our time. So if we're going to take an hour, half an hour, 15 minutes, let's try to figure out a comprehensive program that gets what we need. And if we know the people that are participating in the fishery, then we can randomly observe all the vessels that are participating in the fishery. And then you have a true account of how many trips are being taken and how many boats are out there. Because if these guys aren't reporting and they don't have VMS, you don't even know if they're out there. And those are the guys that are in the open access component of this fishery. So I'm looking for some guidance from the service on how we can solve this problem versus just voting through something that everybody says is not going to work.
Okay, I'm going to go to Tom, and then we're going to do a time check.
I guess I'm struggling here as this discussion has gone on. It's become increasingly murky what the problem is that we're trying to solve. And, you know, maybe that's just because I haven't been involved at the Groundfish Committee meetings. But, you know, initially I thought the issue was that we don't know who the votes are, so they're not getting observer coverage. But I thought I heard the agency say that you think you know who the boats are, and they do get observer coverage. Now, whether it's random or not is an issue that needs to be looked at. So I think part of the, I don't know, am I the only one? I'm struggling to understand what is the problem that we're trying to solve.
Okay, it's 12:33. Do folks want to keep beating this around, or do you want to take lunch and come back? Okay, so let's take an hour break for lunch, and hopefully the proponents of the motion to substitute on the board will come up with some perfected language. Yeah. And same lunch deal today as yesterday. There you go.